faces the defining challenge of our time. Democracy, government of the people, by the people, for the people.
Biden's virtual democracy summit begins. It's December 9th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Jessica Stone in Washington. You'll also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, China lashes out at Australia for joining Olympic boycott. Hong Kong's Jimmy Lai convicted for remembering Tiananmen. Mixing and matching COVID vaccines. Meet the Nobel Peace Prize journalists and the case of the Singing Sisters. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The first virtual summit for democracy is underway. In his opening remarks, U.S. President Joe Biden said democracy is a choice.
Democracies are not all the same. We don't agree on everything, all of us in this meeting today. But the choices we make together are going to define, in my view, the course of our shared future for generations to come. And as a global community for democracy, we have to stand up for the values that unite us. We have to stand for justice and the rule of law, for free speech, free assembly, a free press, freedom of religion, for all the inherent human rights of every individual.
The United States is planning to provide up to $424.4 million toward the Presidential Initiative for Democratic Renewal. It's designed to grow democracy across the globe. The two-day event gathers more than 100 world leaders, civil society activists, and journalists for the largest gathering of its kind ever held. And as VOA's Chris Cascajo reports, the summit highlights that even developed democracies are facing trouble.
The Biden administration says the virtual forum will touch on three themes: strengthening democracy, defending against authoritarianism, and promoting respect for human rights. But officials acknowledge some backsliding of rights even in more established democracies, including the United States, with contested elections and restriction of civil liberties amid a global pandemic. And in Asia, from Myanmar to Hong Kong, there has been real regression, says Phil Robertson of Human Rights Watch.
And we've seen this certainly with the COVID-19 pandemic, where the pandemic and, you know, various different regulations on public health have been used across the region to limit free speech or to prevent people from gathering to demonstrate peacefully for their rights. And, you know, these sort of things need to be taken on.
Rights groups are watching to see what specific actions will come out of the summit. Michael Jonathan Green with the Center for Strategic and International Studies says the summit itself is an important signal to civil societies and dissident groups, but it's not enough.
So I think the administration needs to find a way to consult and integrate this more in our diplomacy, to find ways to reach out to more countries. I think they need to be more inclusive in the year of action.
Dr. Chan Dang Vu, a practicing psychiatrist in Virginia and a member of Viet Tan, a group advocating for democracy in Vietnam, says he hopes the U.S. and like-minded countries will impose targeted sanctions on corrupt officials. Vietnam is not among the summit's participants.
One of the sanctions that we have in mind, and in our opinion is one of the most effective way, is to go directly into the where it hurts most. That's the pocket of those responsible individuals who are abusing human rights and kind of making the corruption rampant in those countries.
A recent report by Civicus, an international nonprofit organization, labels it one of the most closed societies in Asia, next to China, Laos, and North Korea. The White House has already taken some actions leading up to the summit. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
The Biden administration will not send any diplomatic or official representation to the Beijing 2022 Winter Olympics and Paralympic Games, given the PRC's ongoing genocide and crimes against humanity in Xinjiang and other human rights abuses.
On Monday, it announced the creation of a national strategy on countering corruption. Chris Cascale, VOA News, Washington.
Over the weekend, China held its own virtual international forum on democracy, reportedly joined by politicians and scholars from more than 120 countries, and released a white paper falsely claiming its one-party system is a democracy that works better than the system in the United States. In one of the more colorful examples of Russian pushback on the summit, a Russian political commentator writing in a state-run Chinese newspaper compared the U.S. initiative to, quote, a mistress of a brothel teaching morality to schoolgirls. Taiwan was reportedly invited to the Democracy Summit, which has displeased Beijing. Earlier this week, China's foreign ministry had this to say regarding a reunification between the mainland and Taiwan. Here's Foreign Ministry spokesperson Wang Wenbin on Wednesday.
We will strive for the prospect of peaceful reunification of the two sides of the Taiwan Strait with utmost sincerity and efforts. But China will absolutely make resolute response to Taiwan independence, separatist activities, and outside interference in safeguarding its sovereignty, security, and territorial integrity. No one should harbor any illusion about this. The sequence and causality here are crystal clear.
On Tuesday, U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan answered a VOA question regarding Taiwan and the U.S.'s months-long efforts in the Indo-Pacific to avoid what it called an invasion of the island by the mainland. We invite you to read much more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Hong Kong stifles journalists with threats of expulsions a year after security law. Philippine human rights groups dismayed after Supreme Court rules parts of an anti-terror law unconstitutional. Pakistan reports first case of Omicron. New Zealand's plan to end smoking, a lifetime ban for youth. And United Nations Security Council slams sentencing of ex-Myanmar leader Suu Kyi. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. A small but influential group of Western nations has announced diplomatic boycotts of the upcoming Beijing Winter Olympics, citing China's record of human rights abuses. Britain, Lithuania, Canada, and Australia have all joined the United States in the effort, which will keep government officials from attending the Games without sacrificing the athletes' ability to compete. For Australia, though, the move comes at a high economic risk. The country has already been hit by Beijing's boycotts of major commodities such as coal. And as Phil Mercer reports, China has condemned Australia's diplomatic boycott of the Beijing Winter Olympics as, quote, political posturing.
Australia's boycott of the Winter Games in China includes politicians and diplomats. It comes as friction between the two countries intensifies over human rights, trade, and allegations of Chinese interference in Australia's domestic affairs. Canberra's call last year for an inquiry into the origins of COVID-19 also infuriated Beijing, which took it as criticism of its handling of the virus. Disputes over Hong Kong's democracy movement and China's military ambitions in the South China Sea have also contributed to the tension. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison.
It is not surprising that Australian government officials would therefore not be going to China for those games. Australian athletes will, though. Australia's a great sporting nation. I very much separate the issues of sport and these other political issues, and I would like to see those issues resolved, but they are not resolved. Australia will not step back from the strong position we've had standing up for Australia's interests.
China has said that tensions in the bilateral relationship lie squarely on the Australian side. China is Australia's biggest trading partner. Political disputes in recent years have seen China impose tariffs and restrictions on a range of Australian imports, including coal, wine, barley, and lobsters. Caitlin Byrne is the director of the Griffith Asia Institute at Griffith University in Queensland. She says Australia's diplomatic boycott of the Beijing Winter Olympics could cause China to retaliate.
Will it achieve any significant outcome? Possibly not. And in fact, it does bring risks as well. China has already said in response to the United States statement of the diplomatic boycott and in response to Australia that there will be countermeasures. And we are likely to see some kind of response. It's not clear what that will be.
Australia's diplomatic boycott follows a similar move earlier this week by the United States and Britain. On Thursday, Canada said it too wouldn't send officials to the Winter Olympics, which start February 4 in the Chinese capital. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, a blow to democracy in Hong Kong. Happening now in Asia. Toymaker Lego is building a new factory in Vietnam to keep up with rapidly growing demand for its colored plastic bricks across Asia. The Danish firm says it will invest more than $1 billion in the project, which will be its second Asian factory after it opened one in China back in 2016. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're so happy you're with us here on VOA Asia. Media tycoon and prominent pro-democracy advocate Jimmy Lai was convicted Thursday for taking part in an unauthorized candlelight vigil commemorating the 1989 Tiananmen Square massacre. Lai and seven other people were accused of incitement to knowingly take part in an unauthorized assembly by participating in the event last year. Authorities banned the annual June 4th event for the first time in 3 decades in 2020, citing coronavirus concerns. Also convicted Thursday were Chow Heng Tung, who is a vice chairperson of the now defunct vigil organizer, the Hong Kong Alliance in Support of Patriotic Democratic Movements of China, as well as activist and former reporter Gwyneth Ho. Thailand's Supreme Court has jailed a top construction tycoon for more than 3 years over a poaching incident in a wildlife sanctuary. Premchai Karnasuta shot and cooked over a campfire a black panther. He is president of Italian Thai Development, PLC, one of the country's biggest and best-known construction companies. It has been involved in mega projects such as the building of an international airport and Bangkok's mass transit SkyTrain system. Thailand's Buddhists are addressing a shortage of ordained male monks by allowing female monks to serve. So far, some 258 women have been ordained as bhikkhuni. Venerable Dhammananda was ordained in 2003 as the first female monk, challenging the long-standing patriarchal traditions of her faith.
Our aim is to follow the path of the Buddha. The Buddha allowed women to be ordained, so we just fill in the gap that we did not have in our country. At least we think we have fulfilled the Buddha's mission of establishing the fourfold Buddhist communities.
Read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. The bodies of India's defense chief and 12 others who died in a helicopter crash arrived in New Delhi Thursday. General Bipin Rawat, his wife, and 12 defense personnel were en route to a military staff college when the Air Force helicopter they were traveling in came down. All the big stories coming your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. SAGE, the Strategic Advisory Group of Experts on Vaccination, will brief on the outcomes of an extraordinary meeting to examine evidence on the efficacy and problems of using and mixing different vaccines for COVID-19. VOA's Lisa Schlein reports.
Current data show that vaccines against COVID-19 provide a robust level of protection against severe forms of disease. However, emerging evidence indicates vaccines begin to lose their effectiveness about 6 months after they have been administered. This puts older adults and people with underlying conditions at particular risk. Chair of SAGE, Alejandro Cravioto, says the group of experts agrees a booster shot would provide a greater level of protection for people at risk. However, he notes, vaccines are in short supply in many parts of the world. He says the wide administration of booster doses risks exacerbating inequities in vaccine access. He notes most current infections are among unvaccinated people, the majority of whom live in poor, developing countries. He says Sage believes they should receive these life-saving vaccines instead of providing further doses to people who already are fully inoculated against the coronavirus.
For the time being, we continue to support, one, the need for equity in the distribution allocation of vaccines, and two, the use of third doses only on those that we have previously recommended, those that have received inactivated vaccines and those that are immunocompromised, which are the two groups that we feel should be protected further by a third dose of the primary process.
Kraviotto says the meeting also discussed the feasibility of mixing and matching different vaccines, such as those developed by Pfizer and Moderna, to achieve full immunity against COVID.
So WHO supports a flexible approach to homologous or a single platform versus a heterologous mix and match schedules. We still believe that the best approach is to use the same vaccine for the two primary doses.
For national immunization programs, however, he says a different vaccine can be used for an additional third dose. This if the vaccine used for the two primary shots is in short supply and unavailable. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Making headlines in Asia. A Japanese billionaire and his producer arrived at the International Space Station Thursday morning, the first visit by self-paying space tourists to the orbiting outpost in more than a decade. Fashion tycoon Yusaku Maezawa and producer Yozo Hirano blasted off for the International Space Station in a Russian spacecraft. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. A Philippine newspaper journalist was gunned down while watching TV at a store in a central Philippine city. Jesus Malabanan, a 58-year-old provincial correspondent for the Manila Standard newspaper, died while being transported to a hospital after being shot once in the head by one of two motorcycle-riding men on Wednesday night. The Philippines has long been regarded one of the world's most dangerous countries for journalists. Two journalists from Russia and the Philippines will receive the 2021 Nobel Peace Prize in Oslo Friday. The Norwegian Nobel Committee said it was honoring the pair for their efforts to safeguard press freedom. Henry Ridgewell reports.
The Nobel Peace Prize is the latest accolade for Filipino-American journalist Maria Ressa, who has received numerous awards for her efforts to defend press freedom in the Philippines. She spoke to reporters at Manila Airport Tuesday on her way to Friday's Nobel ceremony in Oslo.
There's a part of me that is happy, yes, but also angry and hoping for a better future.
Ressa founded the news website Rappler, which has had its license suspended by Philippine authorities. She is an outspoken critic of President Rodrigo Duterte, and her scrutiny of the government's often deadly war on drugs has seen her clash with authorities. She has been arrested several times, most recently in 2020 when she was convicted of cyber libel and was sentenced to 6 years in jail. She is currently out on bail. Further libel charges were filed against her and six other news organizations Wednesday by a Filipino government minister. Earlier this week, a Manila court gave Ressa permission to travel to Oslo, ruling she was not a flight risk.
Look, it feels like it's really a small price to pay to keep doing our jobs, but we shouldn't have to worry about this. I shouldn't have 10 arrest warrants. I shouldn't be out on bail. There's so many shouldn'ts.
Ressa is sharing the 2021 prize with Russian journalist Dmitry Muratov, editor-in-chief of the newspaper Novaya Gazeta, a frequent critic of Russian President Vladimir Putin. Since 2000, six Novaya Gazeta journalists have been killed in connection with their work, including top investigative reporter Anna Polikovskaya. Muratov spoke to reporters in October after learning of his win.
For us, this prize means the recognition of the memory of our late colleagues.
Novaya Gazeta was co-founded by former Soviet leader and fellow Nobel Peace Laureate Mikhail Gorbachev. Gorbachev called Muratov a courageous journalist. When President Putin was asked about Muratov's Nobel Prize in October, he gave this warning.
If he tries hiding behind the Nobel Prize, using it as a shield to violate Russian law, then he will be doing it deliberately to attract attention to himself or some other reason.
It is the first time since 1935 that the Nobel Peace Prize has been awarded to journalists.
If you care about being able to shape the society in which you live, if you care about being able to hold leaders accountable, if you care about solving problems like climate change or figuring our way out of this pandemic, then you need to be informed. And you can't be informed if journalists can't do their job.
Both the Philippine and Russian governments deny targeting journalists or stifling a free press. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
During COVID, when all the theaters were closed, two sisters decided to take their musical talents to the only stage available, the street. The rest, as they say, is history. Anna Nelson reports. Anna Rice narrates her story.
I'm Lauren Kidwell. I am 33. I've been in the city, in New York City, for about 5 or 6 years. This is my sister.
Hi, I'm Hannah Kidwell. I've been in the city for about a year now, and through that year, I've been singing on the street with my big sister, Lauren.
Professional singers, sisters Lauren and Hannah Kidwell have been raising their voices on New York streets since October 2020.
When we came back to the city and we decided to go out and sing, it was supposed to only be something that, like, you know, we'll do this until we can find other jobs. We never in a million years thought that it would be as successful as we had, that this could be our only job.
For many artists, COVID shut down the theaters where they worked. Singing on the street became the only way for many singers and artists to both earn some money and share art with people.
Sisters, sisters, there were never such devoted sisters.
We're both professional actors normally. But the theater, you know, industry was completely shut down. There was just no work. We just kind of decided to go out there and sing on the street and sing the songs that we love, songs that we both grew up on, which was like songs from the 1920s to the 1960s.
The sisters grew up in a Los Angeles suburb in a very tight-knit family, and love for music has always been part of who they are. Their father is a musician, and their grandmothers and grandfathers are all opera singers.
I've got a house, a show place.
I got my undergrad degree in directing. I thought I was going to go be a director and direct Broadway shows and, you know, live my career that way. And then after I graduated undergrad, someone heard me sing, and they're like, no, you need to get back into performance. That's absolutely something you need to do. So I went and I got my master's degree in musical theater from Boston Conservatory.
They always dress in beautiful clothes and sing old songs. They say they could just throw on jeans and t-shirts, but that just wouldn't be the same, neither for them nor for their audience.
There's something about nostalgia and something about that genre of music and that time period that really just evokes something. It just, like, it reminds them of a grandparent or, like, of a time in New York City. And being able to share something really special with people, they felt their city, which they loved, was on lockdown and would never breathe again.
Stars shining bright above.
They may not be singing on Broadway stages yet, but Lauren and Hannah Kidwell have been giving their fellow New Yorkers a gift, the hope that things will get back to normal and their city will shine again, renewed and revived. For Anna Nelson in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can also find us on Instagram and YouTube, and of course on our website at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Keith Lane, Chris Cascajo, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Jessica Stone in Washington. Enjoy the day.